It had been a vague ambition of mine to visit Gettysburg someday, because I had a stubborn sense that as a dutiful citizen, I should see it. That someday came very suddenly this summer when the friends who were giving me a ride home on a leg of their road trip announced we would be visiting the national park there because it was July 3rd, which is not only the eve of Independence Day, but also the annual anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg. Predictably, there were throngs of people there, and like battlefield generals ourselves, my friends and I determined to divide the crowds and conquer. While one took our orders to the snack bar and the other lapped the gift shop, I stopped by the front desk at the visitor center, where I was given a brief orientation along with a map, some brochures, and oddly, a paper cutout of Abraham Lincoln. Of course, Lincoln is a key figure there, having delivered his famous Gettysburg Address just months after the bloody battle concluded. At the time, the cemetery holding the remains of Union and Confederate soldiers was being dedicated. In his fabled address, he hailed that town in Pennsylvania as a final resting place for those who gave their lives that our nation might live. As I walked around the hilly field and down into the old-fashioned town with my friends, I realized that the entire area, really, was a graveyard. Thousands of Americans died within days, warring with each other. Everywhere we went, there was another obelisk or hewn stone paying tribute to those slain and troops that were hell-bent and decimating one another. It was 1863, the year that began with Lincoln issuing the Emancipation Proclamation, ending legal enslavement in our country, and the Civil War was at a fever pitch, anyone's, honestly, to win or to lose. If you have been or ever go to Gettysburg, you may notice the crushing weight of history pressing in on you. I certainly did, and it kept me from complaining about the heat and the crowds. As I trailed behind my friends who marched confidently ahead, bound for their landmarks, I grasped my tiny cutout of Lincoln in my hand. At the park, they called him Little Lincoln, complete with the apostrophe, and they had even given him his own hashtag for social media posts. He couldn't be a more incongruous figure, fictive as he was. He did not look anything like those photos taken of our greatest American president. This cartoon Lincoln looks almost jocular. He's wide-eyed, a smile crosses his lips, he's got one hand high in the air as though he were waving to you from a distance. He was every inch hashtag Lil Lincoln, your battlefield buddy. And I was fascinated by him, perhaps perversely. In his brilliant book, The American Soul, Rediscovering the Wisdom of Our Founders, Professor of Philosophy Jacob Needleman calls Lincoln's face the legendary profile of this nation. In later photos, we see a gauntness in his cheeks, a haunted look in his eye, his hair and beard in apparent disarray, and somehow recognize in his world-weariness a true embodiment of virtue. What Professor Needleman spies in Lincoln is an intensely human presence for what is often characterized as a great soul. There is no smallness about him, nothing at all little. An unmistakable spirit characterizes his photographs as well as his words. His Gettysburg Address is a piece of classic oratory and yet incredibly poignant. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal, Lincoln began, noting that the United States was already faced with a test of whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. As Lincoln declared, America was only aimed at something, and nowhere near arrived. Only time could tell whether this nation under God, as he so eloquently put it, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. His speech seems to pair a national apology with a daring mandate to his fellow citizens. It is for us, the living, to be dedicated to the unfinished work, to the great task remaining, Lincoln contended, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That demands high resolve indeed, that to not only sacrifice ourselves, but everything that we might think we know about our democracy. In order for this country to survive, the old America always has to die, so that the newer America can be born and then born again. As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master. This expresses my idea of democracy, Lincoln proclaimed. Whatever differs from this to the extent of difference is no democracy. Our reliance is in our love for liberty. Our defense is in the spirit which prizes liberty as the heritage of all people in all lands. The end of centuries of chattel slavery in 1863 only marked the beginning of democracy coming that much closer to being realized. Most of us here today would agree, I think, that American democracy has yet to be truly realized. That does not mean, however, that our democracy itself is ill-conceived. America was an idea. What other country can say that? Professor Needleman asks us in his book, American Soul. The crimes of America are as much a part of its meaning as its ideals, and to embrace one without the other will lead us nowhere, he contends. According to Professor Needleman, there have always been two kinds of democracies, the ideal and the actual, known by various taxonomies, the vertical and the horizontal, or the spiritual and the political. He draws a clear distinction between the democracy of desire, of having one's own preferences prevail, and the democracy of conscience, of discerning what is right and fair for all. These days, nearly every election cycle is an attempt to seduce us into that degraded democracy of desire, and it proves as irresistible to so-called liberals as it does to so-called conservatives. Democracy presents us with a massive spiritual challenge because it routinely asks us to lose. Think about that for a moment. This curious system of governance asks us to lose so much. To lose lives in wars that we hope are just, certainly, but also to lose landmark court cases, to lose presidential and gubernatorial races, to lose seats in Congress and Senate, to lose that latest referendum on the local ballot. It asks us to tolerate defeat time and again, every couple of years or so. The democratic process involves almost constant contests, and the winners and losers every time are friends and neighbors to each other, as well as fellow citizens. Given that, it's astonishing that civil wars are not continuously breaking out among us. In hindsight, admittedly, it seems so obvious to us who was standing on the right side of history and who was standing on the wrong side against progress and inclusion. Yet democracy essentially presumes that some of us, at some time or another, have made errors. Errors that need to be corrected. We have made errors in judgment, and it forces us to reconsider those. Every branch of our government is presently making mistakes that it will have to correct for later, and those mistakes have human costs. Our task is to stave off the despair that reality might induce in us, and instead toward hope that collectively, as a populace, we can learn to do better and be better. What do we need from each other, Professor Needleman asks? What do we owe each other? In a democracy, what we owe each other is a better future. To love America is to love the future, Professor Needleman maintains. Earlier this week, the Honorable Elijah Cummings of Maryland became the first African-American legislator to lay in state at the U.S. Capitol. He was the son of Southern sharecroppers and a congressman to Baltimore for decades, a leading light in the Democratic Party. Our first African-American president, Barack Obama, delivered his eulogy. During it, President Obama recalled Representative Cummings telling him, 200 to 300 years from now, people will look back at this moment and they will ask the question, what did you do? And hearing him, President Obama said, we would be reminded that it falls upon each of us to give voice to the voiceless and to comfort the sick and give opportunity to those not born into it, and to preserve and nurture our democracy centuries, centuries into the future. Preserving American democracy is exactly what Lincoln intended to do when he delivered the Gettysburg Address, and when he gave later speeches near to the end of the war, and then after it. He called on the victors of war to take care of how they treated and regarded the vanquished foe. Because in democracy, it not only matters who you fight or what you fight, it also matters very much how you fight. One historian quoted Lincoln as saying, now I don't know what the soul is, but whatever it is, I know it can humble itself. Democracy requires that we be soulful and humble in equal measure. It is important for Americans to recall the mighty sins and considerable failings of our democracy. Over time, they have become incontrovertible, painful, embarrassing. America has been horrible as well as noble. Yet our collective soul can atone for those horrors, and our collective soul can grow into greater awareness of our sacred charge as citizens. Can there be an American nation unless there also exists within a unified soul? Professor Needleman asks. External democracy without spiritual democracy will inevitably destroy itself and the people within it. According to him, within the world that is America as it actually is, there waits another America, another world. Within and behind what America is, there lies what America means. What America means has global import, Professor Needleman contends, and I am in complete agreement with him, that the mythology of American democracy ultimately serves international and humanitarian purposes. I have friends in the Chinese Christian community, and in 2017, my husband Ben and I traveled to Hong Kong to spend a couple of weeks with them. They were as stunned as we were by the results of our latest presidential election. And over dinner one night, my oldest friend there told us, we need very much for our American friends to succeed. The line has haunted me for a couple of years now, and as I read the disturbing headlines about ongoing and escalating civil unrest in Hong Kong, I think how much Ben and I need for them to succeed. And the whole world does, honestly. Democracies always underscore how much we need one another to survive. This is the mark of great ideas, Professor Needleman explains. They unify people. We are called to grow together, to grow beyond ourselves, to be committed to growing our common good as nearly and as wisely as we can discern that, which should be with increased insight generation after generation. We are asked to entertain majestic thoughts, to dream big, to extend our reach toward people with souls of their own, with whom we will share this civic and sacred project. Our common prayer should be an echo of that poet's line, America will be. America will be. we have to insist on it. We are called to look beyond our narrow self-interest, to climb onto the shoulder of giants and scan the horizon for that distant promised land that we have only described as a shared vision, but neither built nor entered, and likely will not in our lifetimes. Weirdly, I did what I was told at the visitor center at Gettysburg, and I took pictures of myself and my friends and the landscape with hashtag Lil Lincoln featured prominently in most of the shots. My favorite photograph of him was taken atop an observation tower in the national park, with the figure of Lincoln propped up on the iron compass, orienting us toward the area, the east, due south, far west, true north. Behind Lincoln lay the breathtaking expanse of an open democratic vista. Our greatest president knew to point us in the right direction. Maybe he did, or maybe he did not understand how very far we had to go. But now that we can see that for ourselves, we best not stop short of our ultimate destination. Please rise in body and spirit for our final hymn this morning, number 143 in your gray hymnal, Not in Vain the Distance Beacons.